calls grow for a grand jury investigation into JEA. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And just ahead this hour, we speak with Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci on the JEA affair. You can join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, Culpepper stops by as the Jaguars finally end that losing streak. That's later. But first this morning, Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci says he will introduce a resolution today calling for a grand jury investigation into JEA. He's the first public official to take this step. Nearly every day, new revelations about the utility's drive to privatize are being revealed. Carlucci says they're troublesome enough to warrant an independent probe. He joins us now in studio with more. Matt Carlucci, good morning.
Good morning to you and your listeners.
Thanks for being with us. What are your questions and comments for Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci as he calls for a grand jury investigation into controversies at JEA? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we're already getting your Facebook comments. I'll get to those in a moment. So you plan to introduce this resolution today. You say it has to do with troublesome behavior surrounding the sales process of JEA. What led you to make this public call for a grand jury?
Just because every day something else seems to be going awry. By the way, I misstated my first press release, if that's what you want to call it. I'm not introducing it today. I'm starting the process of putting it together. That's a process that may go for a week. We don't have our first meeting till the middle of January, so I have time. And I want to make sure that I get it right and that it's compelling, because I think this is really needed. I think city government and the JEA needs a good set of eyes to see what's going on. And to be clear, grand juries are not just looking to indict people necessarily. Sometimes they do.
The old saying is a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich. That, well, most of the time they come back with indictments.
Well, they may, but that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not on a witch hunt. But they also look at the way the public trust is being handled. It looks at the efficiencies, or the inefficiencies of government. The public trust, though, is the big one. And it's clear to me that looking at this process, it's broken. Millions of dollars are being moved around, perhaps to other people involved in the process. I don't know. I don't know. But there's lots of money involved here.
And potentially hundreds of millions of dollars,
lots,
or billions.
Yes.
And let me just give this phone number again. Where do you stand on calls for a grand jury investigation into JEA's push to sell to a private owner? It's 549-2937. In your statement, you lay out a series of reasons why you think a grand jury needs to take a close look at this problem that the city's been grappling with. Beginning with a proposed bonus plan that JEA introduced this summer, it became hugely controversial. The utility withdrew it. It could have resulted in hundreds of millions of dollars that could go directly to JEA executives in the event of sale. You also cite ethics violations, or the appearance of ethics violations. JEA CEO Aaron Zahn, we've learned in the last week, co-owns property with a lobbying firm that's lobbying the utility. Also the what you call the lack of sunshine on awarding all of the contracts to law firms and consultants and others who could profit from a sale, not to mention that the JEA leadership went up to Atlanta to hear bids from private suitors interested in buying this utility. Those are just a few of the issues you lay out. Let me ask you, Councilman, are you calling for State Attorney Melissa Nelson to open a state grand jury, or are you hoping that the Department of Justice gets involved at a federal level?
I made clear that I'm calling for a grand jury investigation. I'm not sure if it should be state or federal. I tend to think it should be a state grand jury because federal is more looking for criminal activity. I want to be real careful here. I'm not calling out any criminal activity necessarily. I'm not calling out any names. Not going there. But a state grand jury tends to cast a bigger net over, you know, probable cause, perhaps on individuals. It can also look at the inefficiencies of government in the trust of public officials or the conduct of public officials with the public trust. So, you know, I think a state grand jury might be more in order, and don't know where our current state attorney stands on that now. Like I said, this is not going to be introduced today. This won't be getting introduced until the 15th, so it's not even paper form yet. It's just up in my mind as to what I want. I'll have people that are smart, that understand the processes that I will bring around me as I put this together from the general counsel's office and so forth.
Give us a call. Let us know where you stand on calls for a grand jury investigation into JEA and its push to sell to the highest bidder. It's 549-2937. We reached out to State Attorney Melissa Nelson's office this weekend, and they let us know that they are working on a statement that they will release to the public about the growing calls for a grand jury. In researching this, Councilman, I was also given to understand by at least one legal expert that JEA CEO Aaron Zahn, if he were called to testify before the grand jury, that there is apparently a legal precedent that he would have immunity from prosecution. I'm going to double check that. But this person cited this as rationale for directing your calls to the feds rather than to the state prosecutor. But I'm going to research that a little more. At the same time, if Melissa Nelson were to face growing pressure to investigate irregularities, as you call them, within JEA, would she be better served to recuse, given that she has ties to some of the potential figures that could be deposed in this matter? Her campaign consultant, Tim Baker, who is allied with Mayor Lenny Curry's chief of staff, Brian Hughes, is a figure of notable influence. He's a lobbyist and a campaign consultant. Would she have to recuse and kick this investigation over to the circuit to our west, the Gainesville circuit, because of these personal ties she has?
I've heard about those they're true. I think Baker Hughes ran her campaign, if I'm not mistaken. But at the end of the day, that's up for her to decide. I have great confidence that she will do the right thing no matter what. That's what I think. So I don't look to her for recusing herself. I have great confidence in Melissa Nelson. And my unlawyer-like instincts tell me the state may be the best way to go, but there's a lot of questions I have, and you don't put something like, you know, this was my fault because I said I was going to introduce it Monday. I shouldn't have done that. It's a figure of speech that you get involved in saying sometimes on the council. But I'm going to begin the process of putting this resolution together. I guess this Christmas vacation that we get nowadays that we didn't back in the day comes in handy in giving me the luxury of some time to do it.
Will you get any support from your colleagues? Your colleague Brenda Priestley Jackson, who serves on the city council, she put forth an emergency resolution stating that the council would call for all bids on this utility to stop. That didn't pass. It's sort of been kicked into 2020 for further discussion.
I am not going to predict who will vote for my resolution or not. I tell you what, I supported her resolution. I think it was right on target. There was one amendment that she had that I didn't vote for, but it was a good amendment. But the reason I didn't vote for it was because it would have put it off to the next meeting, although it called for no sales to be done before that amendment was voted on. So I understood what she was trying to do. She was right. But just the principal core in me said, we need to take this up tonight and pull the plug on it. And you know what I'm going to tell you? Let's say the whole thing ended today, which it won't. But let's just say that it did. There still needs to be an investigation of what led us to this point. The one thing I was going to say is, when a process begins, it should start with the end in mind. For example, if we made the sale, well, there'd be a windfall of money. What are we going to do with a windfall of money? Nobody knows. Mm-hmm. So why are we doing it to begin with? So when a program begins, it should start with the end in mind. That never happened.
Now, you also say that you're calling for a grand jury investigation because you are concerned, and I'm quoting here, about what other irregularities may be found once a grand jury begins its work. That seems to hint at a knowledge maybe of other issues. What do you mean by that?
I've been an observer of Jacksonville politics since I was 10 years old, and I have seen my fair share of grand juries. And once they start getting involved, and they take some time, they discover other irregularities and other, you know, I'm seeing a lot of smoke. Maybe they would find the fire. Maybe they don't find the fire. Maybe everything's been done just like it should be. But I don't think the public has a lot of confidence in even talking about the sale of the JEA until this thing has been scrubbed real good. And I think the grand jury is the best way to scrub it.
Okay, let's go to your calls now, as Matt Carlucci is the first public official to join other community voices calling for a grand jury investigation into the process to change the ownership of JEA. Most likely, its leadership, according to everything we've seen so far, wants to sell the utility to a private owner. Where are you on all of this? What are your questions? It's 549-2937. Tom is on the west side. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Good morning. I totally agree that the investigation is warranted. It seems like this process has been marred by deceptive statements throughout. What I was wondering is, would it not be more appropriate to launch a broader probe that would include the Kids Hope Alliance microgrants and also the FAMMUSA's solicitation of consulting contracts, all of which have looked a little bit suspicious.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for that. Those are two other controversies that have dogged this mayoral administration. The suspended head of the Kids Hope Alliance, Joe Peppers, has alleged that he was pressured to hand out microgrants that went outside the legal procurement process. Sam Moussa, a former top aide to the mayor, has been accused by some of improperly pressuring school officials with regard to their drive for a sales tax referendum. So those are some other issues.
Well, and because the JEA is so high profile right now, my resolution tends to point towards just the JEA, but I want my resolution to cover city government as a whole. And by the way, the JEA is owned by the city of Jacksonville. It's not an island unto itself of which they can just sell it without having any conversation, which they did not have any conversation with the council. They didn't even tell the council auditor, as is proposed in the city charter, which our general counsel disagrees with, and that's fine. I respect our general counsel. Different lawyers, different opinions. But so I think that, you know, what I want to do with this is cast a broad net. And
so you would anticipate an investigation would look at some of these other recent controversies?
I wanted to look at the government of the city of Jacksonville. I'm not going to point out any particular ones because I just don't think that's my place. I think that's the place of the grand jury, but I want to cast a net over the entire processes of the city government.
Do you believe the current administration is corrupt?
I believe that I don't want to go into that. It's just not my style. But I see a lot of smoke, a lot of irregularities, a lot of things. I am one council person who has served with three other mayors, okay? Three other administrations. This administration is a lot different. So maybe they're right and I'm wrong. But there are irregularities that I see that I think at this point warrant a good look.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Bill is in Mandarin. Hi, Bill.
Hey, comment aside, if I might, it sounds like we're talking the Mueller report here, where we started down one path and had some very good intended consequences. But the thing that kind of bothers me here is I have not seen any economic analysis on just the water as separate from the electric. And I wonder if that might not have some import on the decision-making, et cetera.
Okay, yeah. That's something a lot of customers have asked about. In the event of a sale, who would have purview over our water?
Well, I tell you, that's a question that is an excellent question. We don't have to sell the water. We shouldn't sell the water. The expert on that issue is Rand, Councilwoman Randy DeFore. And I tell you, she is, to me, been one of the bright rising stars of our city council. And she can address those issues, sir, much better than I can. All I know is I don't want to lose our water. Now, I'm talking about my personal opinion. I want it to stay public, water and electric. But, you know, that's just my opinion. It's one thing to have a good, honest discussion. It's another thing when the JEA says they're going to sell and I find out about it in the newspaper. The council auditor has not been given a 30-day notice. The city council's given no ahead of time notice, no discussion, no conversation about whether the, and we own it. The city of Jacksonville owns it. Now the mayor's punted it back over to the city council. So
that's he's asked you and your colleagues to lead on this. What's your reaction to that?
Well, he wants us to lead, and he wanted us to get it done by the end of January. That's not going to happen. I think Council President Wilson has sent a very clear message, and I like his leadership. Sometimes he moves a little faster than I can, but he's younger than I am, okay? But I'm going to tell you, don't ever underestimate Council President Wilson. He's doing a good job. I think he's in one of the toughest spots a council president has been in a very long time. And
why is that?
Well, just because of the JEA has really been such a boiling pot since he's taken office, and other matters that I won't go into. But he has done, I think, an outstanding job, and I really commend him.
And he has publicly stated this process is going to be drawn out for several more months. The council is holding public workshops on this matter. You're heading over to City Hall today. There will be a hearing.
Yes.
Now, it's anticipated some speakers today will call for the resignation of JEA CEO Aaron Zahn. Are you calling for him to step down?
I did that 3 weeks ago.
You think he should resign?
Yes. Listen, he's got great skill sets, I'm sure, but being the CEO of the Jacksonville Electric Authority is not one of them. So I made it plain with a press release that Aaron Zahn should resign, and the board should go on a nationwide search for the best public utility CEO available, steeped in integrity and in experience, who knows how to drive this authority in the way that it needs to go and prosper.
Here is a tweet about this. It was sent by the mayor last night. Mayor Lenny Curry tweets, "I am in full support of Council President Scott Wilson and his statement. Any media suggesting otherwise are just creating click drama. I was clear in asking JEA to give all authority to the City Council in choosing the strategic future of JEA." What's your response?
Well, I mean, I think there's some parts of that I think are good because the city of Jacksonville owns the utility. But remember, it goes back to the Jacksonville Electric Authority is owned by the city of Jacksonville. The council is the one who should be deciding whether we should sell it or not. But otherwise, it's an independent authority. We're supposed to let them do their job. So really, the answer to me is get the very best CEO possible for the Jacksonville Electric Authority. There's some good board members on there. Some I don't know. Some may need to be changed, some may not. But let them do their job with a CEO who is can-do, who understands the value of a public utility, it's not that hard for public utilities to get into other markets like has been sold to us.
Do you believe the current CEO, Mr. Zahn, was elevated at the mayor's urging so that he could carry out the mayor's wish to privatize?
That was my understanding.
So that narrative that's developed around this, you think it's accurate?
I think it has a lot of merit. I mean, I didn't actually see it happen, but how do you pick a CEO who has no experience over somebody who had great experience but couldn't get down here because of Hurricane Matthew? So he had to do, I think, a phone interview, and then they went with Aaron Zahn. And I don't want to be sitting here picking on Aaron Zahn. This is no fun, but I got to tell you, this is a fiduciary responsibility that the council has. And I think this is so important that if we were to pass any transactions on the JEA, and it turned out later that the process was corrupt, was misguided, that would mean that myself and the council might have breached our fiduciary responsibilities.
Lots of tweets. Here's one from a listener. Something is fishy with Project Scampi. That was the code name we learned JEA had for privatizing. It's time to dig into everyone that stood to gain from this sale and how they're connected. The board members with their bonuses, the lawyers drawing up the contracts,
yes.
The consultants vetting the bids.
Yes.
Let the truth come out, he says. And here are a few comments on Facebook. Michelle writes, Mayor Curry needs to answer for this fiasco. He and his money friends started this when they thought up a way to generate a large sum of money for the developers' pet projects. They blatantly did things and made moves to benefit a small group of people and lied when asked about it. Take them down, she says. Adrian writes, if JEA worries about their ability to keep pace, do they have a master plan in place with specific needs and funds needed to keep pace with growth? If not, why not? And how does a new headquarters fit into a sale? That's another story that's emerged, is that the utility is moving ahead with plans for a brand new headquarters in the midst of all of this. And let's get another call on. It's Cynthia in Lakeshore. Hi, Cynthia. Good morning.
Hey. How are you, Melissa?
Okay.
I called before. I'm so glad that Matt Carlucci is calling for grand jury investigation. The analysis that I've read that was put together, it was not an opinion. It was a thorough financial analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, then that goes back to what...
I should turn off my radio.
Yes, please. Turn down your radio and go ahead.
Down that idea. The whole thing is that the financial report showed that JEA is poised to continue to grow and continue in its financial strength. And the city of Jacksonville, as a public utility, will benefit more by having it continue to be a public utility than getting it, you know, selling it. So it should have gone to the council in the first place before it was ever considered. And that is where it is.
Okay.
It has made it so confusing.
Thank you, Cynthia. And to be clear, the city council will be weighing in on this and has been and will continue to. Let's explain the process going forward for that, Councilman Carlucci.
Well, first of all, today, Councilman Ron Salem and Roy Diamond have a one of perhaps several meetings they're having about this plan, this performance unit plan.
This was the bonus plan that the utility scrapped because it became so controversial.
They're trying to take a hard look at that. I appreciate what they're doing there. I appreciate the fact that Scott Wilson has basically called time out, and he's looking at this very thoughtfully, very closely. Cynthia was the last caller, I think, and she made a very good point. You know, where are we going with all this? And that's why I said earlier, and this is the third time I said it, when you start a process, you usually have the end of the process in mind. Nobody talked about, okay, we're doing this because this is where we want to be at the end. Or we want this at the end. How are we going to get there? Is it raising millage? Is it raising a sales tax? Is it selling off the JEA, or are we just selling the JEA because it's doomsday and we're in a death spiral? Nothing's been very clear or transparent from the beginning. And I just think that, you know, it's time for an independent set of eyes to look at this, and that would be done by a grand jury, period.
Well, we thank you once again for appearing on the show. We will continue to follow this closely because so many of you out there have asked us to stay on this story. Jacksonville City Councilman at Large Matt Carlucci, thank you.
You are very welcome.
And up next, First Coast filmmaker Nadia Ramatar on today's F word. It's fat. We'll be right back.
Live Nation presents the Tedeschi Trucks Band live in concert Friday, June 26, 2020 at Daly's Place. It's the Wheels of Soul 2020, the sixth annual tour with special guest St. Paul and the Broken Bones. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com.
Hey, I'm Lindsay Kilbride, and you might know me as the host of WJCT's podcast, Oddball.
The ball rolled from the center of the table all the way to the edge and stopped.
We don't know what else is inside of it.
Yeah, it could be anything.
Are you insinuating that my father was like some kind of UFO kleptomaniac?
Yep, that podcast. I want to thank everyone who has listened, and I want to make more cool podcasts. So let my bosses know you want that too. Make a contribution at oddballpodcast.com and be sure to subscribe.
Take a drive with us into the blues horizon. The best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, filmmaker Nadia Ramatar undertook a very interesting project a while back. She decided to follow five Jacksonville men around with a camera for an entire year. Nadia was documenting their efforts to lose at least 100 pounds. Her new film, It's Huge, tells the story of how challenging obesity, a complex disease, can be, and how hard it is in this society to lose weight. Take a listen.
If you see an obese person in film or in TV, typically they're the butt of the joke. We learn to have a thick skin.
I think people have a great misconception of why people are overweight or why people are dealing with obesity.
Well, I've tried all kinds of different diets. Sometimes when it doesn't work out, you blame everything on yourself.
I have two small children that if I don't get my weight under control, that I'm not going to get to see grow up.
That's a preview of It's Huge, which is being released this month in the U.S. and Canada. Filmmaker Nadia Ramatar is here along with Dr. Tim McCormick, who is also featured in the documentary. Good morning to you both.
Morning. Thank
you. All right, Nadia, let's explain what led you to make It's Huge and spend a year following five local men around and getting them on camera.
Well, Melissa, you asked that question like a woman who's made films before, as I know you have.
Yes.
And the insanity is implicit in the, it's nuts. It's totally, it should have been called It's Nuts instead of It's Huge. But it was a very ambitious project. I think perhaps that what I was trying to see was what would happen if we took away, you know, a lot of reality television has no reality in it. And one of the things they do in a lot of transformation shows is they lock them in a room. They don't let them have foods in the house. They take them away from their families and their jobs and they keep them separate. And a lot of us have watched, you know, Biggest Losers and things like that, only to see that these people go and put the weight back on almost right away. So there was a lot of hype around how easy it was. And I think what I was hoping was that we would get a chance to see what would happen if we provided them, Tim and the other professionals provided services at no charge to the men in the documentary, what they would do if they were given the tools, but they had the free will to either do it or not do it.
Either do it or not do it.
And we didn't force them to do anything.
So Dr. Tim McCormick, you helped these five overweight obese men try to get to a healthier weight, and you approach this from the medical perspective that obesity is a disease, right?
Correct. I mean, it's a disease process, and it can just further propagate into more health problems. And it's something that we saw as an opportunity to really intervene with if we could start correcting a lot of their weight issues. But this project, I think, showed that it was much more complicated than merely diet or exercise, us putting them on medications. We delved a little bit deeper and showed really all the facets of these gentlemen's lives and kind of what they were going through and how they got to this point. And it kind of taught us all lessons, too, about how we could reach out to them and how we could meet them where they were at.
What will people learn when they get to know these five men? Because as you say in the film, the only F word left today is fat. calling someone fat is so hurtful,
offensive,
and offensive. Yeah. And these are all guys that have had that happen to them. What will we learn about their journey? What's the most important thing we learn?
I think that one of the things we're going to see is some people will watch this and maybe identify with the people who are the professionals who are all slender, who are trying to help them, you know, and then you see the men struggling and you see each one. And all five of them are such different personalities. They really humanize this. They really, really do humanize this. So I do think from a practical standpoint, people will get some practical skills if they're trying to be healthier. And perhaps what it will do is help people understand why this is so complicated. Right now, statistically, the United States is the second largest in obesity in the world.
We're a nation of big people.
Well, and it's getting higher. Mm-hmm. That's the amazing thing, is that we're up to 39.8%. That's a massive, and it's growing, Melissa. So since we began this, it's increasing. So I think what we do know is that it's not working. And I think that what we are looking at in this film is we're looking at meditation, we're looking at food, we're looking at nutrition. And you know, I don't want to give away too much of what's in the film, but one of the things that happened is that Tim was able to identify that one of the men had a heart condition where he could have died at any second. And through tests, we were able to find that. A lot of people don't want to go to the doctor because they don't want to be told that they're overweight. And therefore, they're walking around. And one of the big issues with obesity is sudden death. You literally will just drop down dead at any age. The two of the men in the film had a best friend who was 35, I believe, who dropped down dead and left small children. And that was her friend. And there's a very emotional scene in the film where the two men are talking about that friend and about him being gone.
And they didn't want to join him.
No.
So what do you say, doctor, to those listening who judge overweight people? They say, if you want to lose weight, it's not hard. Just eat less and exercise more.
Yeah, that's the simple belief out there. Just your problem is you're lazy, you're not exercising, you're not dieting. But it's actually multifaceted. There's many factors involved. And as a physician, we can use certain medications that can address, you know, what various behaviors are, eating patterns and stuff like that. But I think one of the things this film showed was that people can relate to these guys and they could see what the struggles were and they could see in themselves ways which they could change their lives.
This film is out this month. How can people see it?
It's coming out December 19th for sale. So it'll be available the usual Best Buys, Amazon.com, all of those different ways. And then it will be available for sale as a download in January, I guess when everybody, Melissa, will be feeling
needing to
awful
lose weight
after losing. But Michael Hausman, who you know, who's a producer, an Academy Award winning producer, said to me after he was part of this team, the leadership team here, he said, you know, Nadia, this is a love story, which is such an interesting perspective on an obesity film. But
it's a loving look at these individuals. And you can go to the website, itshugedoc.com, to learn more.
Yes, and like us on Facebook, of course, and follow us on the social media.
And of course, Nadia was here in the U.S. for many years, but she moved back to Ireland a while back, and you can hear the change in her voice.
I'm bilingual, I like to say,
Melissa. And it's so interesting. I love your new Irish accent. You're leading retreats for people to Ireland, and you've got one coming up in May.
I do. It's so exciting. And it's actually based on the Irish pirate queen, Grace O'Malley, who a lot of people don't know about, but she was an Irish pirate queen at the time of Elizabeth I. And we'll be going to her castles and to places. And it's kind of an odd combination of yoga transformation. And I'm doing it with my good friend, Caroline Holmes. So we're doing some fun, creative things, which, of course, is another good way to lose weight. Have fun. That's not food related.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, thank you both. Filmmaker Nadia Ramatar and her consultant on this project, Dr. Tim McCormick. The film is called It's Huge. You can buy it beginning on the 19th. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
We'll be right back.
WJCT as we celebrate 20 years of America's Test Kitchen. To mark this occasion, WJCT is hosting an America's Test Kitchen recipe contest on Instagram. Calling all cooks, chefs, and foodies, pick your favorite America's Test Kitchen recipe, cook it, capture a pic of your dish, and share it to your Instagram page using hashtag WJCTTestKitchen. Visit WJCT.org/testkitchen for more information.
That sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Welcome back. There's a strong connection between music and brain development, and a local nonprofit is taking advantage of that by providing music therapy for local kids with special needs. They recently got a big grant from the city that's helping expand this to more children. Karen DeMuth is executive director of Connecting Through Music. She's here now along with her board chair, Dr. Nancy Statz. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning, Melissa.
Karen, let's start with you. Connecting Through Music is on the rise. You just got a $160,000 grant from the City of Jax to bring more music therapy to more North Florida children. That's great news.
Yes, we are very grateful. We are very grateful and happy and excited about this grant. This grant will allow us to expand throughout the county to after-school programs, holiday and summer camps. So we're able to have a bigger footprint in DeVal County for music therapy. We also have a program in two public schools that is music enrichment with children with special needs. And we are able to provide music experiences with a music therapist to 180 children there outside of the grant.
And Dr. Statz, how does music therapy help local kids with special needs? How does it work in their brain?
Well, that's a great question, Melissa. It's a little more complicated than a few word answer. But what I will say is, I think we can all appreciate that music is a different experience than spoken word. And especially in a nonverbal child, music provides a gateway into the brain, but it also allows them to express themselves and be part of a group and to control emotions and really express themselves sometimes in a way that they otherwise couldn't.
It truly is the universal language. It's magic, too. I mean, aren't there magical reactions and improvements that you see in some children?
Yes. With our program, it's data-based. We collect data. We're working with board-certified music therapists that integrate goals, curriculum, core words into the program. What we are seeing is growth. We're seeing a foundation with the children, a foundation for learning. What we're really seeing is joy. I have a special needs child, Dante. He's 9 years old. And the growth and transformation that I have seen in his life because of music, the learning, he's starting to speak, but he's more engaged. He's in tuned. And we're seeing that with the children in the classrooms.
And your goal is to expand this to more classrooms, of course, right? Because not every child that needs it is getting it.
Right. Well, for right now, Connecting Through Music is providing the program in two schools during the school day. And for that, we need to raise $60,000 during the giving season to sustain that program. We are then expanding with the help of the grant from KHA outside of the school program. To do this, we are going to need to relocate music therapists to our city. We are looking to build a footprint of music therapy in the Northeast region of Florida. In the Northeast region of the United States, in Central and Southern Florida, there are many more music therapists than we have here. So we really have a big task to educate the public about the difference between music therapy and music and how it can positively impact children with special needs, to raise the funding, and then to bring the music therapists to our city.
A big job. So, Dr. Statz, how can people who are listening to this help you? Lots of people love music. Lots of people love kids.
Yes.
Lots of parents out there have kids with special needs. So how can they help?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to emphasize we are a 501c3 corporation. So that means 100% of any donation received is tax deductible. And if you give by December 31st, you can deduct that for 2019. We can accept monies from individuals, corporations, et cetera. Karen has all the information, phone number, but you can go to info@connectingthroughmusic.com. And let me emphasize that through is spelled T-H-R-U. And also our website, www.connectingthroughmusic.com.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to also mention, unlike some charities that really go on and have no end in sight and you think, oh gosh, how are they ever going to do this? My hope is that eventually music therapy will be a covered service, and it already has started to happen. So
that's the backstory, because schools don't have the resources to offer these types of
correct.
Programs. So you ladies are stepping up, and kudos to you for doing so. So again, that website is connectingthroughmusic.com. And the impact of music therapy on children is data-based, science-based, and real. So check it out. And thank you, Karen DeMuth and Dr. Nancy Statz, for all you do. It's exciting. And have a great holiday.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you so much for having us.
In a moment, the Jags and their losing streak. Cole Pepper has that.
Farrah & Farrah, dedicated to representing the injured people in Jacksonville for over 40 years. Learn more at farrahandfarrah.com or 396-5555. Farrah & Farrah's accident attorneys are here for you, here for good.
Times Union Media is proud to announce the inaugural Times Union Half Marathon and 5K Hemming Park on January 11th, 2020. Sponsorships are available. Register at timesunionhalf.com.
On the next Fresh Air, actress Charlize Theron, who stars as former Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly in the new film Bombshell. She tells us about transforming herself physically for the role, and she'll talk about growing up on a farm in South Africa during apartheid and being raised by a strong mother. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Mary Ann Carroll, one of the original Highwaymen artists and the only woman in the group, has died. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll remember Mary Ann Carroll. We'll discuss George Ballantyne, a 19th century Englishman in Florida, and efforts to preserve stories from the Second Seminole War. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
She's been called America's most powerful flight attendant. This year, Sarah Nelson helped end the longest federal shutdown ever.
And the plane stopped, and we said, "Do we have your attention now, Leader McConnell?" And a few hours later, we had a resolution.
Sarah Nelson, one of the nation's top labor leaders. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Culpepper Sports Wrap-Up is brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
Welcome back. Well, the Jaguars have ended their losing streak with a win in Oakland. She's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? And Gardner Minshew led the way with a little Minshew magic. Cole Pepper is here, as he is every Monday, to take us through the game. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, this was surprising in more ways than one. The Jaguars hadn't won on the West Coast since 2005. They are in the midst of a five-game losing skid. At halftime, they had only two first downs. And you thought, well, here we go again.
Yeah.
But instead, the losing streak is over. They win in the Pacific time zone for the first time in the last 11 trips. Gardner Minshew led a pair of touchdown drives in the fourth quarter in a 20-16 win, spoiling the Raiders' final game in Oakland before they move to Las Vegas next season. Their final two games are on the road this year. A lot of fans were probably sitting back saying, why do they have to win and hurt their draft slot? And I get it. By the way, they went from 6 to 8, where they would have been 6 if they lost, 8 with the win. Still going to be in the top 10. But there are some very good things that really came out of this. First, we learned a little bit more about Gardner Minshew and his approach. Clearly, he is not mailing in the rest of the year. The fact that he was so efficient after a bad start is a great sign. He completed 14 of his last 18 passes in the game. We also saw Chris Conley step up with DJ Chark inactive for the game. The Jaguars needed someone to be the go-to guy, and Conley did just that, catching both touchdowns, including the game winner in the final minute. Jags were also the beneficiaries of some bad clock management by the Raiders. They left too much time on the clock when they attempted to miss a field goal before the Jaguars' go-ahead touchdown. There was also a bad call by the referees when Derek Carr, the quarterback for the Raiders, slid down what looked like inbounds. The clock should have continued to roll. Instead, the officials blew that one. But hey, the Jaguars will take it. And while it's been a pretty miserable second half of the season, at least for a few days, the Jags and Jaguars fans can enjoy not wallowing in the pain of another loss. It's going to make things much better over there at the stadium. I will say this, though. I don't think it changes anything that's going to happen or is likely to happen at the end of the year. I still expect substantial changes for the coaching staff at front office.
Sure. Yeah, that's us. Evidently what we can all look forward to. But in the meantime, let me just read a few of the top tweets from last night. Here's one. QB Gardner Minshew now 5-5 as a starter with two road comeback victories after being down at halftime by double-digit points. Here's a tweet from a fan. Gardner Minshew makes me want to take a shot of cobra venom mixed with Bacardi 151 and go surfboarding on a great white shark.
Yeah, listen, there are reasons why people get excited about going to the game. Sometimes it's about the fact that a team is in contention for the playoffs or they're playing a rival. But Gardner Minshew is the number one reason why people have some hope. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the final game of the season. Traditionally, Games around the holidays in Jacksonville have not been particularly well attended, and when a team is not going to the playoffs, you would expect maybe you won't see that. But maybe Minshew's magic is more than just the mustache and the swashbuckling style. Maybe it's the ability to actually get people to come out and watch a team that isn't going anywhere.
That's the thing, just getting the fans excited, getting them engaged, right?
Yeah, and there are other reasons to be engaged and excited about this team. Josh Allen, the rookie, got his 10th sack of the season. He's just the seventh player in Jaguars history to have 10 sacks in a season, and he's only a rookie, so certainly more good things to come from that standpoint. Yannick Ngakoue also had a couple of sacks. He has 8 on the season. Mm-hmm. There are some good things here. The Jaguars aren't going anywhere. The injuries and some poor play have certainly impacted what's happening, but there are some things to build on. The problem here, the challenge, is that Jaguars fans have had too many Decembers where they've sat there and said, all right, well, what about next year? At least we got to Thanksgiving before things really, went off the rails. But it's going to be another season of change and an off season of change. And the biggest question, of course, is going to be who is going to wind up being under center for the Jaguars next year. I think we're going to see a quarterback competition between Minshew and Nick Foles in the off season. And the draft is going to be enormous for this team, because they need to find more good big men, whether that's a left tackle or whether that's on the defensive line. They need some more big guys early in the draft. The good news is they have 2 first-round draft picks thanks to the trade of Jalen Ramsey.
All right. And now the calendar for you, Culpepper, hopefully for your sake, slows down a little bit as we get closer to the holiday, at least the sports calendar, which runs your life, I know. It's kind of lightening up a little, which I know is good for you.
We've turned the page from high school football to high school basketball now, so that helps. But I will tell you, basically year-round now, there are things going on in the sports scene in Jacksonville to keep us occupied. The difference is a lot of more of them are inside after the season, the holiday season goes past. So you don't have to weather the storm quite as much. I was down in Daytona for the Bulls state title game. They lost in the final minutes to Booker T. Washington from Miami. Kind of a misty, raw day with the wind swirling. And you think, well, okay, you're still here. You get to cover this game. But sometimes when you're inside, if it's Sharks or Icemen or whatever else, it's not so bad either.
Not so bad. He is the hardest working man in the local sports business. So follow Cole on Twitter at Culpepper. Catch him every Monday on this show and watch him on TV most nights at Channel 4. Always good to have you.
Thanks,
Thank
Melissa.
You. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow to talk more JEA news with City Council member Brenda Priestley Jackson. That's coming up tomorrow. We always value your feedback. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for some music. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll connect again tomorrow morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.